Thanks for listening to the Herd Podcast. Be sure to catch us live every weekday from 12 to 3 Eastern, 9 to noon Pacific on Fox Sports Radio and FS1. Find your local station for the Herd at foxsportsradio.com or stream us live every day on the iHeartRadio app by searching Herd.
Now let's get this party started.
You're listening to Fox Sports Radio.
A Monday, and what a Monday it is, live in Los Angeles. It's the Herd. Wherever you may be and however you may be listening, iHeartRadio, Fox Sports Radio, and FS1, what a weekend. I mean, hockey, NBA, Phil Mickelson, soccer. If you love sports, it was one of the great TV weekends in a year. I mean, it was just a couple of years. It was absolutely fantastic, and Joy Taylor is joining me. 1 hour from now, where Colin was right, where Colin was wrong. I watched as much television outside of an NFL season as I have watched in years.
Yeah, it was a great weekend. The couch got a lot of usage.
Well, my house is being torn down, so I didn't have the couch. I laid in bed all weekend.
Either way.
Okay, so let's start. What do you make of this weekend? Does it matter? Does it not matter? Okay, let's just talk Lakers, Suns. Let's start there. That's the biggest brand in the NBA. Laker fans, here's the reality with Anthony Davis. Celebrate when he's great and tolerate when he's not. That's who he is. The good news is I still like the Lakers, and the series is far from over. Of the many things LeBron James will go in the record books for, LeBron has won 60% of his playoff series when he lost the first game. All time, the NBA percentage is 21%, so he's three times better. Remember, the Suns were favored in this game. They're not favored in the series. They were favored yesterday. The Lakers are favored in the series. Why were they favored? Well, the Suns have been off for a week. They were the better rested team. They're younger, had a ton of energy. It was the first playoff game for Phoenix in 11 years. You could feel the intensity and the juice in the arena. Phoenix at home. This was a celebration of a once-proud franchise. Now the series simmers down. Both teams are equally rested. Chris Paul's not 100%. And Anthony Davis, who's never been highly motivated, just wildly talented, has always needed to be pushed and prodded. And he is, because he was so bad. We've all worked with an Anthony Davis in our life, somebody that's super talented but doesn't have a ton of fire. You got to kind of light a fire under him, is the old saying. Well, Anthony Davis admitting after last night's game, yeah, I was terrible. I'm horrible. I'll be back. By the way, Anthony Davis, who was the best high school player in the country and then led Kentucky to a national championship as a freshman and has been marvelously talented forever, should never have the worst plus minus in any basketball game he ever plays in. He not only did, nobody was close. He was awful. But I do think he'll be the key factor going forward. And I think the Lakers win the series. Why? DeAndre Ayton's a very talented big for Phoenix. Suns are small, but he's only 23. I don't believe he's going to lock down AD for the series. And the Suns don't have a lot of bigs. Their backup center appears to be Dario Saric. I didn't know he was a center. 6'6 Jay Crowder's another one of their biggest guys. Listen, they're talented, but they're not big. And now Anthony Davis is motivated, which you have to poke and prod him and light a fire to get the best out of him. That's reality. But when you get to a playoff series, it's always been a book, not a pamphlet. Regular season, you're just handing out flyers. Not a lot of depth. Message isn't long. You look at a little tape. Team just flew into town. That's not what a playoff series is. A playoff series is a book with chapters. Every chapter can be different. And LeBron James has been in a lot of these playoff series, and Frank Vogel has been in a lot of these playoff series. So regular season, this happens all the time. But the idea that Phoenix is going to beat the Lakers four times in the next 10, 12 days, I don't buy it. I don't think they have the experience. I don't think they have the size. And that's okay. Nice win for Phoenix. They deserve it. I grew up and the Phoenix Suns were fantastic. They beat my Sonics regularly. In fact, the last time I cried during sports may have been the Suns beating my Sonics with Paul Westphal and Alvin Adams, and may have been Connie Hawkins and Gar Hurd. And I forget who it was, but they were great for years. It's good to have them back. All right, so I want to talk about the Knicks. There's a lot to talk about, but I want to talk about the Knicks. I want to tell you a story. Is that, yeah, you know, you watch movies and Hollywood, these big companies, right? Like they put stars in movies. They put Robert Downey, you know, Tom Cruise, Denzel. They put stars in movies because that's supposed to attract us. But about 20 years ago, there was a movie called My Big Fat Greek Wedding. It was fantastic. And we only kind of knew one person in the movie. It was John Corbett, who had been kind of a big deal in another franchise called Sex and the City. And we didn't know anybody. We didn't know anybody. And I immediately, 10 minutes into the movie, fell in love with the family. How? I didn't have any connection to anybody. Because they were so vested in one another. They loved each other so much. They were so flawed. They were so ridiculous. And they cared about each other so much. It just poured through the screen. And you fell in love with this family. And in a weird way, that's the Knicks. They have one guy from a franchise we kind of know, Julius Randle for the Lakers. And then I'm sitting around deeply invested in a team full of guys I couldn't care less about. I got Alec Burks and Nerlens Noel and Reggie Bullock and an old Derrick Rose who doesn't even play the same way. And I've got Alfred Payton and Taj Gibson. Why do I care about the Knicks? I'm not from New York. I care about them because it's so easy to like people that are so vested in one another. They are so limited. This team is so limited, but they're my big, fat New York Knicks basketball team. That's what they are. That's the movie poster. They're not great. They're not brilliant. Julius Randle's their best player. He was awful yesterday, and he's not a top 25 player. But yet the Knicks hung around against a clearly superior offensive team in Atlanta. It shouldn't have been that close. I mean, you're relying on Alec Burks to carry you yesterday. An old Derrick Rose. But it just goes to show, when you're all in, I've said this about our country, you're in one direction, you're defiant, you're coachable, you believe in one another, you can be completely limited. If you look at this roster, I mean, the Lakers got rid of Julius Randle. He was one of the first they got rid of. Forget Lonzo Ball, Brandon Ingram, Kyle Kuzma, Josh Hart. Now, they shipped him off early. Can't hit threes. Just look at this roster before the season starts. We never think this is a playoff team. But they totally buy into Tom Thibodeau, who hasn't changed his expression once in 32 years in the NBA. And I buy into the Knicks. Now, yesterday, what happened? Well, Trae Young happened. He's the best player, most talented player on the floor. He's a great young player. Hit a basket, won the game. The key for the Knicks is don't get too high. Don't get too low. You've got a soul. The Knicks are something. They're not something great. They're not something with a high ceiling. But for Julius Randle to play as bad as he has played probably in a month and to hang around a much better team, it was great to see the Garden mostly jammed. The passion, there's a soul. They believe in one another. And I was here for it. The last 8 Knicks games, they've had 5 different leading scorers. And yesterday, it's Alec Burks. What? Wasn't he the guy in Utah that never panned out? Taj Gibson. I remember him more from the Bulls days. But it's great. I sat there and I'm like, why am I so into this team? They're not even pretty. They're not artistic. I mean, I get when you fall in love with Steph or Ja Morant. You fall in love. I mean, I get Dame Lillard. There's guys out there, you're like, I can't take my eyes off him. You could take your eyes off the Knicks in 1 second. There's not a lot there. Trae Young, hard to take your eyes off of. But don't get too high. Don't get too low. This is exactly what the series is going to look like. It's going to go 6 or 7 games. It's never going to be pretty. The Knicks are not built to be pretty. But when you're invested in each other, it is so easy to fall in love with a team or a family or a business. It was a really good watch. Really good watch. All right. So now you don't want to overreact to any of these. Like, it's game one. Except one team that may want to be concerned. In fact, I'm kind of surprised how unconcerned the team sounds when history tells us they're in big trouble. That is coming up next. Colin Wright, Colin Wrong next hour.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific on Fox Sports Radio, FS1, and the iHeartRadio app.
You have to be careful about overreacting to the opening game of playoff series. Now, it does help to win the opening game. It does matter that Atlanta went on the road and odds makers, the bookmakers, liked Atlanta to win this series, and it is big that they went on the road and beat the Knicks in their place in game one. It probably bodes well. But, you know, Knicks in Atlanta to me, Portland and Denver to me, those feel like 6-7 game series. One of them has to be a little troubling. So the Clippers at home lost to the Mavericks. Now, the Clippers are a better team. How do I know this? Because the Clippers won 47 games this year, okay? That's with Kawhi missing 20 games and Paul George missing 18. Two All-Stars missed a combined 38 games, and they still won 47 games. Dallas won 42, and that's with Luka, their star, playing almost every night, and Tim Hardaway, their third-best player, mostly playing every night, 70 to 72 games. The Clippers are the better team. They won more games, missing their stars. They were at home. This should be fairly easy work. Dallas's best player is a kid. The Clippers' two best players are veterans. They've been in multiple playoff series. Dallas is also a bad defensive team, 20th. Rarely does a bad defensive team beat an excellent defensive team in the playoffs. The Clippers, two stars, both great defensive players, Kawhi and Paul George, missed 38 combined games. And they still finish top eight in the league in defense. So I have a more experienced team. I have a significantly better defensive team. I have a young team that's led by a kid that just knocked him off. Yes, there is reason to worry. Once again, the Clippers were awful down the stretch. Last 6.5 minutes, they were terrible. They were at home. This is the matchup they actually wanted. Remember, they bailed the last weekend. They sat all their stars because they wanted Dallas. By the way, Kawhi and Paul George were rested. This is also the game. The Lakers being down 0-1 is not the Clippers being down 0-1. Okay, Lakers were on the road. Okay, Clippers were at home. And the Clippers, off last year's disastrous bubble performance, this was the game to redeem themselves. This is why Ty Lue said, we want our guys healthy, we want them rested. Okay, here it is. What? 6.5 minutes left. Paul George said after the game, it's no big deal. I don't feel any pressure. Here is Paul George after the loss.
We expect to play better. We expect to be more dialed in game two. We're not looking at it as just because of who we have. We're expected to win. We got the same pressure as every team that's in this. It all comes down to who's the last team standing. And that's just the pressure every team goes through. It's no different than how we're approaching this. We got to be better for game two. And, I plan on this team bouncing back.
It is not the same. Twice last year in the bubble. Just last year, the Lakers were down 0-1 and won a series. The Lakers have a history of overcoming, of winning championships. The Clippers do not. And I said this last week. There is a weight on the Clippers' shoulders, and it just got heavier. Steve Ballmer's the owner. Temperamental, big voice, high energy, really smart and demanding. Okay? He did not pay double for this franchise, what the reported value is, for two quick playoff exits with stars. And I said this last week. We've all had somebody in our family. We've worked with somebody where they walk in the room and everybody gets a little tense. Everybody's a little tense. There's a lot of pressure. This is the biggest staff in the NBA. It's the highest compensated. There's people on this executive staff with the Clippers 2 and 3 and 4 down that are making like way more than the NBA average. Steve Ballmer pays his people well, but he demands production. And this does not feel like everybody else. Miami's down 0-1. So what? They got to the finals. Pat Riley's got a trophy room. Eric Spoelstra's got multiple trophies. Heat being down as a slight underdog 0-1 is not the Clippers as a favorite at home with two-star veterans off a lousy bubble being down 0-1. I don't buy it's all feels good. Nothing to see here. I think there's a lot to see, and it's potentially trouble. Joy Taylor with the news.
No.
Turn on the news.
This is the Herdline News.
Ooh, that was a fun NBA weekend. The Nets got off to a slow start in game one against the Celtics. Durant, Kyrie, and Harden were combined 5 for 20 in the first quarter.
It was a really, there were a lot of bad first quarters this weekend.
A little bumpy out of the gate.
Yeah.
Missed all 9 3-point attempts in that period, but they got it together. They hit their stride in the second half. KD finished with 32 points and 12 rebounds. Kyrie scored 29 and Harden had 21, 9, and 8 in the 104-93 win. This was only the ninth game that the Nets Big Three have played together all season. So not terribly surprising that it was a little bumpy at first.
Yeah.
But this is what you expect from the Nets. Even if they have a quarter or a half like that, once they get to shooting, they can get right back in it, and then they're rolling.
By the way, that ooh-ah was from KD hitting the deck. He hit the deck twice. That one looked painful. You know, it's funny. Years ago, you could hand check in the NBA, and then the league eliminated it. And so it's virtually impossible to stay in front of Ja Morant or Kyrie Irving. And the one of the advantages that Brooklyn has is they have two guards, Kyrie and Harden, that create separation. They create their own shot. There are a lot of teams in the NBA that do not have one player that creates their own shot. They have two guards that create their own shot. And without the hand check, I mean, you're just at their mercy. So this is a team that we question, Joy, their ability to protect the rim.
Yeah.
Their chemistry and their health. But you have a guard play with them that is, I mean, even as good as the Warriors' backcourt, Stephen Clay, Clay's a catch-and-shoot guy. He's not really a create-his-own-shot. Brooklyn's offense is not, that's not what worries me, because they can get a shot anytime, and a good shot anytime they want.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I don't expect this series to go long, and that's not necessarily this current Celtics problem. I mean, Jaylen Brown is out. That's huge.
That's like, the series.
You can't be losing stars at this point in the season. And, you know, the Celtics have been kind of a strange team, very up and down all season anyway. So if you're going up against an offense like the Nets, you really want to be 100%.
You know, it's interesting you mentioned Jaylen Brown. If you had Jaylen Brown, Tatum could guard KD and be annoying. Jaylen Brown, excellent defender, to be honest, could kind of guard Harden and be annoying. And Marcus Smart could guard Kyrie and be annoying. It would still be a net series, but Jaylen Brown's loss, they just can't play they want to play. This could actually be a very competitive, it'd be a 5-game series, but the games would be ugly. But without Jaylen Brown,
you're missing his scoring also.
It's just not going to be, I mean, I think that's about as competitive a game as you'll see the rest of the series.
Yeah. So Damian Lillard led the way for the Blazers game one win against the Nuggets. I have the Blazers winning this series.
Sensational.
He scored a team high 34 points and made 5 of their 19 3-pointers. Portland's strong shooting behind the arc wasn't the only reason that they pulled off the 123-109 win over Denver. They also kept Jokic's assists down, which Lillard pointed to as a key for their success.
When they're at their best, you know, he's setting the table. He's dominating the game. As a playmaker, and he's scoring, you know, he's just kind of having his way. And you know, a guy that is as good as he is, an MVP candidate, the MVP, in my opinion, you know that he's going to play well. You know that he's going to do what he does, but you got to try to take something away.
Everybody's very out there with their MVP opinions lately.
Well, maybe like, we should vote in it, about it after the playoffs.
I know. When they give the MVP is ridiculous as well. It's like the playoffs are over and everyone's mad about it because they usually aren't in the finals.
Right.
And it's like a whole thing. But Jokic had one assist yesterday. Now, that is key because Jokic is the best, in my opinion, big passer in the league. Like, he's unbelievable.
Yeah, he's the best since Arvydas Sabonis is the last big that passed like that.
Yes, so to hold him to one assist, this is the fewest assists in a game all season.
Oh, wow, is it really?
Averaged
wow.
a career high for him, for Jokic, 8.3. He averages 8.3 assists per game. So
he's a point center.
So that is significant that they were able to do that. Game two is tonight at 10 Eastern. So the Bucks held on in a close game one.
God, they're
ugly. As a fan, I'm allowed to overreact to every single game, if it is game one and the Bucks were supposed to win. But I really would have liked the Heat to steal that, and they were right there in it in overtime. Giannis had 26 points despite shooting 10 for 27 from the field and 6 of 3 from the free throw line.
Free throws.
Yeah, he was 6 of 13 from the line.
And a lot of those were late, man. He is just... You know, I will say this, though. Again, this is what Milwaukee is, which is cross your fingers, Chris Middleton, and play great defense. I mean, Butler and Bam struggled.
Well, Butler definitely struggled shooting, but he was still, in the end, he was the clutch. Like, he was the one that sent it to overtime. So that's what this was a very interesting game for both teams. Butler struggled, but it didn't matter because in the end, he was clutch when he needed to be. And Chris Middleton showed up, and that's really what the key is to winning games like this, is if Giannis is, you know, not great from the free throw line or you're lacking points here or there, you have another guy step up, and Chris Middleton did. He had the clutch moment game winner with less than a second to give Milwaukee the win and had a huge game. So, you know, 27 points, 6 rebounds, 6 assists, that's going to help when Giannis only has 18 points, and Drew Holiday had 20 as well. So it's going to be an interesting series. Game two is tonight. Let's get this one, Heat.
Yeah, by the way, there's games every night this week.
That's great.
Yeah, so the first round, there's so many teams still in it. So there's a couple of games tonight, couple Tuesday, Wednesday. I think the Lakers play, is it tomorrow? And then they play Thursday.
And great series, too.
Yeah.
Usually the first round series, we kind of know what's going to happen.
Not this year.
Not this year.
Except probably Sixers-Wizards feels like Nets-Celtics kind of quick. Joy with the news.
Well, that's the news.
And thanks for stopping by.
The Herd Line News.
Chris Broussard, NBA analyst for Fox Sports, now joins us live. Brought to you by Mercedes-Benz, the best or nothing. Well, I mean, I said it earlier with AD. You got to just put your arms around him when he delivers and tolerate the rest, because he's not always highly motivated. He's just wildly talented. Kind of your takeaway from game one loss. Does it become a game two loss and a game three loss? How does it land for you, Chris?
No, look, I think that LeBron does this a lot in game ones. He feels it out. You can go back last year to Portland game one. They lost. People start thinking, oh, the Blazers are going to sweep the Lakers. Of course, LeBron writes himself, sees how the Blazers want to play him, and then they win the next four games. Same thing happened in the next series with Houston. You can actually go back throughout LeBron's career and see at times he has used game one to see what the other team's going to do, and then he responds, and it usually works out. So I'm not – he was passive yesterday shooting too many threes, but I think there was a strategy there. As far as AD, look, the Lakers – you can't consistently – expect great performances from AD this year. Now, I'm not saying for the rest of his career. I expect him to bounce back next year to kind of the old AD that we saw last season. But for whatever reason, this year, he's not himself. So I think, Colin, throughout this series, he's going to have a couple of great games. He's going to have a couple of solid games. And he's going to have another bad game, probably. Not as bad as yesterday, because that was horrible. But I just don't think he's going to be the consistently great player throughout playoff series for the Lakers. He was bad. Look, it's not just his numbers, which were horrible yesterday, and his plus minus was twice as bad as any other player in the game. It's that he let DeAndre Ayton, in his first ever playoff game, gain confidence. Like, he should have slapped Ayton around, you know, figuratively, and outplayed him and showed him this is a different level now. We're in the playoffs, son. I'm about to show you how it's done, and then next year you will be better in the postseason. But now he's got DeAndre Ayton thinking, hey, I can dominate in this series, because he did dominate yesterday. And so now he's going to have to contend with a very confident DeAndre Ayton throughout the rest of this series. So it was a horrible performance by AD. I think the Lakers still win this series, But he's going to have his hands full now.
The one series that I do think has some resonance, we know the Clippers have struggled late in games. Last 6.5 minutes against the Mavs, not a good defensive team, by the way. Not a good defensive team. Luka didn't score a ton down the stretch. The Clippers were atrocious. It's one of these things, man. It's when you have a certain style or a liability, Chris, and then it resurfaces, even hints of it in the playoffs, it gets in your head. I mean, I this is like a baseball team with an atrocious bullpen. I look at this series and I think, this was supposed to be the redeem game. This is worrisome if you're a Clipper fan, is it not?
Absolutely. Look, now they've lost four straight playoff games. That may be playing in their head for all we know. And as you said it, throughout the season, really, let's be honest, going back to the bubble playoffs, they have had trouble closing games, which is baffling, Colin, when you have two guys in George and Kawhi who can break down the defense. Kawhi is an excellent mid-range shooter. That is critical in late games, in late moments. But they're not able to deliver. Playoff Rondo was supposed to fix that. And this is not on Rondo because he played well yesterday. He gave him the three-point lead, Colin, with the three-pointer and the free throw midway through the fourth quarter. And then they fell apart and he couldn't solve it. They just degenerate into one-on-one play with either of their two stars going at it. And of the top six seeds in each conference in the playoffs, the Clippers were the worst in clutch time play throughout the season. So they could lose this series. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. And look, when the Clippers signed Kawhi Leonard 2 years ago, they felt we are going to have the best player in every series we play going forward. Even at that time, remember, he's coming off the championship.
Yeah.
And it was arguable. Is he ahead of LeBron now? Yeah. Is he ahead of KD? It was arguable. So they've played three series, or this is the third one. He hasn't been the best player yet. It was Luka, it was Jokic, and it's Luka again.
Yeah.
And I want to see Kawhi go to Ty Lue. I want to see him go to Ty Lue and say, look, give me Luka. I want him. And I get it that they're running pick and roll and they're creating switches. And so Kawhi's not going to be able to be on him for 40 minutes. But I want to see Kawhi take up the challenge like we've seen LeBron or Jordan or Pippen or any of these other great defenders do in the past. Kawhi is 29. He's 29. He's not 39. He's not 35. He should be able to go full bore on both sides of the floor. And apparently he can't do it because now he's more of an offensive player. When he was a great defender, he didn't have to carry the offensive load. But I think he needs to turn back that clock to help the Clippers in this series.
There's so much to chew on. The first round is so fun because this year, there, as Joy said, there's really a lot of even series. So, I mean, the Knicks-Hawks to me, I do think it's a huge win for Atlanta on the road. But, you know, I said this earlier. The Knicks are – they're all in. I mean, yesterday I got Alec Burks – Nerlens Noel, Reggie Bullock, and old Derrick Rose. But you know what? Randall was awful, and they still were in there. I did as I watched Trae Young. I thought, boy, points come a lot easier for Atlanta than they do the Knicks. But what did you make of the performance? Is it a death knell? Knicks lose at home. What did you make of it?
I picked the Knicks in seven, and I think this is going to be a close series, and it's going to be a long series. So the Knicks aren't out of it by any stretch. But what bothers you if you're a Knicks fan is the way Trae Young was able to live in the paint.
Yeah.
I mean, they're one of the best defensive teams in the league, right? And he was able to just break them down, and especially on that last shot. And he just got in the paint and finished. He only took three three-pointers, so that shows you how effective his penetration was.
Yeah.
So I thought it was a great coming-out party for Trae Young. And, Colin, we almost are seeing this next generation of stars emerge. Ja Morant was great. Trae Young was great. I never thought of Dylan Brooks as a future star, but he's been balling the last few games. DeAndre Ayton, Devin Booker. I mean, so it's nice to see these young stars. Let me say this about New York. You know I'm in greater New York. I love the Knicks fans. I love their passion. I love Spike Lee. But why? Why do they insist on picking on the opposing star? This is starting to look like Reggie Miller light. All right, Reggie Miller Jr. with the way they went at Trae Young, and he's going back at them. And if this becomes a knockdown, drag-out seven-game series, and Trae is going back at it with the fans, it'll be a lot like Indiana, New York back in the 90s, which is great for us. It's great for the fans.
Yeah.
But it could end up in heartbreak again for the Knicks fans.
By the way, let's talk about Ja Morant. He did it against the Spurs in that playing game. He did it against the Warriors. Now, Donovan Mitchell did not play last night for Utah. Right. That is I still think Utah wins the series. But you watch Ja Morant, and it's like there's some Westbrook, although I think he's a better natural shooter. I mean, what do your sources say around the league? What do you see? I mean, he is something special, right?
People around the league love Ja Morant. And look, I love Zion, and we know they were in that draft together. I can't say I wouldn't take Ja Morant over Zion. And Zion's going to score more. But Ja Morant is obviously a better playmaker.
Yeah.
He runs the offense. He's not much of a shooter at this point. He's 30% from three. But as you said, you can see room for growth.
Right? Oh, yeah.
You can
yeah.
see that eventually he should be a good three-point shooter. He obviously can get in the lane whenever he wants. I was thinking about him and Westbrook watching that game yesterday. And
yeah.
You made good points, that comparison. But he is a smarter player than Westbrook.
He's more under
That's
control. Yeah, no, he's totally under control. He
yes.
really is for a kid. He really is.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's more of a true point guard than Westbrook.
Yeah.
Westbrook's more of an athlete. He's more of a true point guard. And he showed that he's got guts at the end of games where he can hit these big shots. So, look, Memphis doesn't have that much talent, with all due respect, but he's carried. Last year they were on the cusp of the playoffs.
Yep.
This year they're in the playoffs. So that kid is special.
Yeah. By the way, it is. I kind of roll my eyes at Giannis is going to be the face of the league 3 years ago. And I said, listen, man, he doesn't shoot. I do wonder if it's getting worse. That 10-second violation that everybody complained about, you know what that was? Is everybody in the league has a kind of a free throw routine. That was in Giannis's head. And I thought, oh, this is a problem now.
Absolutely.
This is game one of a series. I watched that and I thought, oh boy, now it's one thing to struggle at the line. It's another when you're sitting there doubting yourself. What did you make of the game and Giannis is shooting down the stretch?
Yeah, look, I picked Milwaukee in seven in that one. So, again, I think it's going to be a tough series. But this is the Bucks' problem. This is why I don't see them being able to beat Brooklyn. You know, if Brooklyn's healthy, no way I see them being able to beat Brooklyn because – who is their go-to guy? It's Chris Middleton. We saw it. It's Chris Middleton. Giannis, yes, he's great. He's phenomenal, all that. But at the end of games, when they need a bucket, heck, even during games, they go to Chris Middleton. And Chris Middleton is a very nice player. He's
yes.
an all-star here and there. But if he's your go-to guy, no. And he had a great shot yesterday. Congrats to him. But that's their issue, and that's why Chris Middleton can't be the go-to guy on a championship team.
That's right.
He can be that on a pretty good team, which is what they are. But Giannis, until and look, I've had a great, formerly great player in the league, and now who works in the league, tell me he thinks Giannis is a two, is you know the second guy, precisely because you can't go to him when you absolutely need a bucket. Look at all the ones around the league, Luka, LeBron, you know, we could go on and on. When you need a bucket, you can give it to them. Giannis, you can't.
That's right.
If he's on the perimeter. So they got to, get him inside more and even have him post up more because they got to give him the ball close to the basket.
Good stuff. Chris Broussard, Fox Sports. Great seeing you on a Monday. Wild weekend. We got games every night. Chris, great seeing you,
yes.
man. Thanks.
All right, Colin.
Yeah, and to Chris's point, it's different. Shaq couldn't shoot either, and Shaq was a liability at the free throw line too. But that was 20 years ago. It is a three-ball shooting league now. So, I mean, just think of this. Zion's amazing. He had the highest efficiency rate scoring that couldn't get his team to the playoffs. So if Shaq would be less dynamic today, he would still score. But Shaq wouldn't dominate the league. It was a two-ball league then. It's a three-ball league. So, again, Giannis 15 years ago, Milwaukee's probably already got a title. But the league now has changed. You cannot be a liability. I mean, even Julius Randle. Lakers got rid of him because he was a bad math equation. He's a two guy. And Randle, to his credit now, shoots threes slightly better. Anthony Davis had to add that to his game. LeBron, 10 years ago, added the three to his game. So with Giannis now, it's almost like it's the wrong generation. 15 years ago, Giannis is what everybody in the league wanted. And it's a lot. It's hard for a lot of the fans and the media to embrace this. You can't shoot, you're not going to be the face of the league. I mean, and that's why Zion's got a nice-looking jumper. He does need to eventually, over time, develop, like Julius Randle. He's got to be a threat to hit a three. He's better than Ben Simmons already, but he's got to be a little bit of a threat. Colin Wright, Colin Wrong, top of next hour.
Be sure to catch live editions of The Herd weekdays at noon Eastern, 9 a.m. Pacific.
What's up, everyone? It's me, three-time NFL All-Pro Sean Merriman, and I have a new sports podcast called The Lights Out Podcast with Sean Merriman. This podcast is special to me as I get a chance to talk to some of the best who've ever done it on the field or the track. So whether it's talking to a Super Bowl champion or a NASCAR Cup Series champion, The Lights Out Podcast will bring it to you the only way I know how to. I'm giving you the best insight from the best who've ever done it. Listen to Lights Out with Sean Merriman on the iHeartRadio app, or wherever you get your podcast.
You're still running your business on QuickBooks, more like quicksand. Bigger your company grows, faster you'll sink. Right now, NetSuite, one-of-a-kind financing programs being offered, special financing at netsuite.com/herd, H-E-R-D. So, golf's been trying to sell me since Jack Nicklaus sort of wandered close to retirement. They've been trying to sell me on the next thing. And two guys get me to a TV set, Tiger Woods and Phil Mickelson, for different reasons. Kobe Bryant scored 60 points in his last game. The greats still possess greatness. They just can't give it to you nightly. And golf and sports is always sort of in a hurry to push the new thing and get rid of the old thing. But if you watch that gallery with Phil Mickelson yesterday, nothing against a lot of guys on the tour, but it doesn't look like that. Massive crowds for Phil Mickelson, who at 50 years old becomes the oldest player to win a major, the PGA Championship. He's also got three Masters. He's familiar and he's comfortable. It's why we're on our ninth iteration of Fast and Furious. It's why we've had seven different Batmans. It's why there's been 26 James Bond movies. It's why The Office and Friends and Seinfeld get hundreds of millions of dollars from these streaming services. People like comfortable, and Phil Mickelson is completely comfortable. He takes us back. I got nothing against Bryson DeChambeau. Have another 16-egg omelet, your 13th protein shake of the day. But he doesn't make me feel the way Tiger Woods winning the Masters a few years ago did, or the way Phil Mickelson makes me feel. You know, I always said this about Trump. He wasn't my cup of tea, but he did make a big chunk of America feel a certain way. It's not a way I feel, and it's not something I appreciated. But if you want to be a successful politician or you want to be a big brand, make me feel something. Don't try to lecture me on this or lecture me on that or convince me on this. When I watch Phil Mickelson, I see a guy that has blown majors. He's totally vulnerable. He used to rely on talent. He wasn't in very good shape, to be honest with you, in his 20s and 30s. Now he looks like that's the best shape he's been in. The tournaments mean more. He knows he didn't have a ton left in the tank. In fact, I read this morning. He had not been registered as a top 20 player in 9 months. He couldn't make cuts. So all I know is I sat there on my bed, not my couch, because my house is getting, redone and blown up and whatever, termites now, I found out yesterday. Whatever it is, Phil makes me feel some way. My wife yesterday, we were at dinner, she goes, you know what I want to rewatch? I want to watch The Sopranos again. And I'm like, we've seen all the episodes. She goes, I know, but it's Sunday night, and I'm like, oh, Sopranos made you feel some way on Sunday night. You couldn't wait till Sunday. As a kid, I used to watch something called Wide World of Disney when I was like 6, 7, 8 years old. It was on NBC. I had to take a bath on Sunday night. That was my Sunday nights. Then I remember Sunday nights being the Steelers and the Dolphins, Don Shula, and the Raiders with Kenny Stabler. I remember that when I was young. That was Sunday night. Then I went to high school and college, and I don't know what Sunday nights were. But then all of a sudden, it was The Sopranos and Tigers on Sunday that got me, Tiger got me into a television set. And for a couple hours yesterday, that's what I felt with Phil Mickelson. I was just sitting there thinking, what a great feeling. I am actively rooting for an incredibly vulnerable athlete who's still got just enough in the tank, just enough to beat Brooks Koepka. Great, great day for Phil Mickelson and golf.